was a topic of the Cheskashos that was a major issue in the days of the Rishonim, particularly in the days of the Balei HaTosfos. Mizmanazet's significantly less of a concern for us, but we'll talk about it a little bit because it's almost the final touches that we spoke about last week. So last week we mentioned that Orla is one of the halachas of kashrus, one of the dinim of machlokes haseros. The fact that one's not permitted to eat or to derive benefit from fruit for the first 3 years. And the Mishnah has a chiddush for us, and that applies even in chutz laretz. It's a tremendous chiddush. We pass in halacha that it's actually halacha l'moshe v'sinai. It has certain leniencies that Orlas Herzl doesn't have, but nevertheless, there is a real dinim of kashrus called Orlas chutz laretz. The biggest leniency is the fact that if you don't know, what you don't know doesn't hurt you. So you're not mechuyev to go be mevarei. You're not mechuyev to go ask around where the apples in on the farmer's market came from. You can assume that everything is okay until proven otherwise. In Eretz Yisrael, when you have a suffix or a list, you have to figure out within the suffix the rice of the chumra. But a chutz laretz is a special halacha which is built into the picture. That's tzveikus al kula. So the shadow that the Balei HaTosfos raised is the next step after orla, and that's what's called the status of the fourth year fruit, revoy. The Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim that the vashana arviya siyakobiya kodesh in lulim Hashem. That the fourth year fruit are not usher anymore, it's not orla. On the other hand, it's not a green light to do whatever you want with it. It's called kodesh. What does kodesh mean? So the Tosha Rapeh explains to us, we have a gezei reshava, that the Torah uses the word kodesh by revoy, and he uses the word kodesh by maisa sheni. Just as maisa sheni has to be brought to Yerushalayim to eat betahara, b'kedusha betahara, and it's also in a Torah to eat maisa sheni outside of Yerushalayim, l'sucha lecha b'sharecha. The same is true when it comes to revoy. In the same way the Torah gives us the opportunity to redeem our Ma'aseh She'ini, the Pesukim of Parshas Yisra'el, that you're allowed to betzad lekesef, betzad lekesef, betzad lekesef biyadcha, so you redeem the Ma'aseh She'ini off the coins, then you bring the coins eventually to Yerushalayim, and you use that to buy food to eat the Kedushas Ma'aseh She'ini. That same model exists for revoy as well. So revoy is pretty much identical to Ma'aseh She'ini in this regard. So Tosfos raises the question, what would the din of revoy be for us in Chutz Laretz? So again, it's not going to be any more chomer than orla in the sense of what you don't know doesn't hurt you. So for us, it's not going to make much of a difference. Because we go into a store, we're not going to ask, is this apple revoy, is this apple orla? None of it really interests us. You're not mechut to be trying to be mevayer. But what if you grow your own fruit? The Balei HaTosfos grew grapes. They were in the winemaking business. So they knew exactly what everything was. So for the first 3 years, they couldn't use the grapes. It was also halacha l'moshe v'sinai. And now the question that they raise in the beginning of the sixth Mecha Bracha is, what do we do with the revoy? What do we do with the grapes of revoy? So Tosfos assumes that we look at revoy literally through the lens of orla, and we apply the following rule, that sofek orla of chutz laretz is mutter, sofek revoy of chutz laretz is also going to be mutter. What do you mean sofek? We know say the Balei HaTosfos, that's what we do, that's our parnasa. So we know exactly which grapes are the revoy grapes. So Tosfos says, well, wait a second, whenever you're dealing with the question of revoy, or whenever you're dealing with the question of orla, in terms of sfeikos, a suffix is constituted either by a suffix in metzias or by a suffix in halacha. If you have a suffix, whether something is also a mutter, that's also considered to be a suffix for the purposes of orla and revoy and chutz laretz. So Tosfos makes reference to a sugya that appears in the sixth berach of the seventh brachas. There was a machlokes in the later days of the Tanoim, the very, very end of the program, it's like on the border of the Amorim, there was a machlokes about the dinim of revoy. So the dinim of revoy applied to all fruit, the same way that orla applies to all fruit? Or do we say, for some strange reason, that revoy is limited only to grapes? Managed out of grapes? So the Gemara then has a further machlokes, what would the source be to limit it to grapes? So there's three different possibilities. So one possibility is that revoy applies across the board to all fruits, the same as orla does. And the other day, the Gemara says it only applies to grapes, and within the sheet that it applies to grapes, it wants to further break down what the source for that distinction would be. So Tosfos throws the hands up and says, we don't know what the answer is to this question. We're not sure. It's a machlokes atanoim, it's an unresolved machlokes in the Gemara, and therefore, like all other sfeikos, we have a right to be makel in chutz laretz. So if we have, let's say, fourth year apples, says Tosfos, so that's not going to bother us, because we'll look at it through the lens of suffix. We'll say it's a suffix, whether the revoy applies to it, and we'll call it a day. It's het gomer. We have pears, we have oranges, everything is suffix. But, says Tosfos, if you have grapes, which is the worst thing that we have, because that's what Tosfos did for the living, they would know whatever those words was. So the Balei HaTosfos say that we who have grapes, and we know for a fact that these are fourth year grapes, and grapes apply. For sure, revoy applies to, according to everybody, revoy applies to. So Tosfos says, we are in a pickle. And in Ochanavi, our fourth year grapes are taka problematic. unless we do what the Torah requires of us, i.e. we do pidyon. So that's exactly what Taisus writes. The sixth Bechel Brachas, Taisus writes, that's the minhag. That was the minhag in the days of the Rishonim, that whenever you, if you knew for a fact that you had fourth year grapes, so you couldn't just eat them like that, the other hand, you don't have to get rid of them, you simply be paid to them, you pill to them on a pruta, and then eventually throw the pruta into the river, whatever, you know, to the white kemelet, whatever you do with your pruta and shrine, and call it a day. That's a shikas atosis. So in contrast to Tosus, the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam writes in the sugyas of Orla Duchas Bechol Sasuros, Chiddush, that the Rambam writes, it would appear to him that the dinim of Ravoi do not apply to Chutz Lords at all. The Halacha Moshe Messina, if Orla was given for Orla, Orla's Chutz Lords applies, but Ravoi Chutz Lords, near the Lomar, doesn't apply to Chlal. And even if you have grapes, which would in Eretz Yisrael would for sure be subject to Ravoi, the dinim of Ravoi, lock, stock, and barrel do not apply to Chutz Lords. That's a very, very, Chiddush Tibashit Nisir Rambam. There's a lot of lomdus as to what this Rambam is based on. There are a lot of the Reb Chaim has two famous biurim as to what the world the Rambam is based on. Probably the more popular of the biurim runs something along quickly as follows, that the Reb Chaim explains as a fundamental question what the nature of Orlas Chutz Lars is all about. On the one hand, the Torah says Orlas is one of the bits of Chutz Lars, Chisavola Orlas, should only apply in Eretz Yisrael. And then all of a sudden the Torah trumps that by saying, oh, by the way, there's Halacha Moshe from Sinai, that all applies to Chutz Lars as well. So one can understand that in one of two ways. Either one can understand that the Torah is redefining, in a sense, what Kisavol Arts means. Kisavol Arts doesn't really mean Eretz. Kisavol Arts means that Orla applies in full force to Chutz Lars. There's no difference between Orla and Bergenfield, Orla and Rishalayim. It's all the exact same thing. If that's the case, so then it's hard to believe that Ravai isn't going to apply. So if Orla now applies in full token, with full force in Chutz Lars, this is an issue of Orla, so that's going to be, Orla is going to be known with all the problem of Orla, including Ravai. But maybe the idea of Orla's Chutz Lars is a different form. Orla Leolam only applies in Eretz Yisrael. It can't be, there's no such thing as Orla and Chutz Lars. What's Osir or Chutz Lars? There's a special Chiddush HaTorah, Chaim coined the phrase, Allah Mesina Mechadeshes, that even though this is not Orla, it's Osir to eat fruit for the first 3 years in Chutz Lars. Don't call it Orla. It's a different halachah. It's a different. It's an issa b'frei atzma. It's in halacha city. That's in the chudish nigedin. But it's not part of the parish of Orla. Once you say it's not part of the parish of Orla, it's a din b'frei atzma. So then only whatever hechad the chitcha Torah chitcha. Whatever the Torah is mechadish, Torah is mechadish. The Torah is only mechadish. That Orla. I don't want to say the bad word Orla. The Torah is only mechadish. That 3 years was asur. The fourth year was never included in that chiddush, and therefore fourth year it would be mutter. So this is a shayla already in the post. This is a shayla in Shulchan Aruch about this question. And for us, it's not too relevant. We don't have too many Ravoi shilas and Chutz Lars. Of course, aren't growing fruit in our backyards. But if we would, then we'd have to try to figure out what exactly to do with the fruit of Ravoi. Is there a concern of Ravoi? And if there's a concern, is it only concerned vis-a-vis grapes or perhaps other fruits as well? So now we move on to the next topic concerning kashrus. And we're still, we're getting inching closer to animals. We're getting there soon. Not too long. Animal products, which will probably take us for quite some time. But we're still in the fields for a moment. And that's the issue of something which, at first glance, is a mitzvah tluy b'aretz and should really be a non-discussion. And yet, it's taken on a whole world, a whole life of itself. And that is the issue of chadosh and the issue of yashan. What exactly does that mean? How does that play out? What are the ramifications of that, particularly for us in Chutz Lars? So the Torah tells us very clearly in Parshas Emor that there's an issur in the Torah, the lechem, the koli, the karmel, the sofa, etzem ayam hazeh. That it's also in the Torah, it's a chi of the lav in the Torah, to eat from any new grain, slowly but surely, hopefully define that as we go along, any new grain until ad v'yachmas korban alakechem, until the korban of the Omer is brought on the 16th day of Nisan. Then the Torah Shabbat fills in for us, and what if you don't have a base of mikdash? So then when? So then obviously it's not out of the Yachem is coming on Kechem. So then the Teshuvah Pes says, then Etzem Ayam is Matir. Then the day itself creates the Heter. Whatever was about a mikdash, the korban was Matir. So it was Mashem, it's Mikdash HaKayim. If they brought the korban 10 o'clock in the morning, that was the moment that Chodesh now became Yashin Avdi becomes the Mutar. If you don't have a base of mikdash, Etzem Ayam is Matir. The only thing is, the Gemara is a Machlekes HaTanoim. When we say Etzem Ayam is Matir, does that mean the beginning of the 16th day of Nisan? Or does that mean the end of the 16th day of Nisan? Then the Gemara says, and even if you hold that min haTorah, it means the beginning, but the Rabbanah, they added on to the end of the 16th day anyway. So the Maaseh doesn't make much of a difference for us. Then the Gemara Menachos has a discussion about whether in Chutz Lars they threw in the Sfeikat Yom on this one. So it may mean the end of the 17th day of Nisan. it makes very, very little difference to us because all the Pesach products are always yosher anyway. So it's a moot question, an extra couple of hours. But there is a din in the Torah that chadosh is noeg. That's the pasuk in Chumash. There's an issur d'oraisa of eating chadosh until the day of either the korban itself or the etzma yom, whatever you think the etzma yom means. So there's really a twofold question whenever we discuss the sugyas of chadosh. You know, we spoke about this many, many different times. We'll try to summarize it for our purposes here as well. Whenever you discuss the sugyas of chadosh and yoshan, so there are two issues you have to familiarize yourself with. One is the world of halacha, and the second is the world of metzias. And it's going to be a combination of those two factors that are going to create the certain kulas that have been practiced by Klal Yisrael for thousands of years already, in terms of trying to understand how this does or does not play out, practically speaking, in our world of today. So first we'll discuss a little bit of the halacha. You're really supposed to learn metzias before you learn halacha, but we'll do it now. So we'll talk about the halacha part first, and then afterwards we'll try to plug in what the metzias is, because metzias is constantly changing. So the halachic issue really starts off with the basic question: is chadosh a mitzvah to live or to not? Is it something that's agricultural? And if it's agricultural, then it should be limited only to grain that grows in Eretz Yisrael. So, before the answer to that question is, it's hard to envision of something more agricultural than chadosh. It grows in the ground, it's wheat, it's barley, whatever it is. And therefore, it should be obviously a mitzvah to live or Eretz. So it should be a no-brainer that it doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. The problem is, a pasuk in Chumash. Because the pasuk says, "V'lechem v'kol v'chaim v'sochanim v'chol moshvoseichem." The Torah says, "Wherever you live, v'chol moshvoseichem." So that's a very, very loaded phrase. What do those words mean? V'chol moshvoseichem. So this became the source of a major machlekes haTanoim. So one Tana interpreted the phrase "v'chol moshvoseichem" to mean kipshuto. It means this is an exception to the rule. This is even more of an exception than orla is an exception. Orla, we needed a halacha moshe b'Sinai, which had certain kulas built into it here. The pasuk itself says, this is the exception. So all the other exceptions we've talked about, we spoke about chala, on the level of the rabbanon being an exception, we spoke about orla, this is the ultimate exception, chol moshe b'Sinai, according to one Tana. Therefore, according to that one opinion, it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference whether the grain grew in Eretz Yisrael, the grain grows in the Ukraine, whether it grows in Kansas, doesn't matter where in the world you are. Wherever the grain grows, it's subject to the Issa D'Oraisa Chodesh, and it would have to be looked at through the eyes of any other Issa D'Oraisa. And the cloud cover that we have, we assume D'Oraisa is Safi D'Oraisa L'chumra. So if you have a Safik, whether you have grain or not, that's a problem of Chodesh. If you go with that approach, then you have a real, real problem on your hands. I didn't say that it's necessarily only going to be Yasser. There may be other factors. Sometimes you have an issue, it's called Rove. Sometimes you have a situation where it's not a 50-50 something. Maybe the odds are there's probably not a chadash. So we'll have to talk about that a little bit more as we try to be prepared to see as best as we can. But just from the vantage point of halacha, if you take the view like that, Tana, that the chumash v'seichem is literal, so then chadash obviously would be also min haTorah and chutz la'aretz. But there is another Tana. The other Tana says that's not what the phrase the chumash v'seichem means. So what in the world could the chumash v'seichem mean? Chumash v'seichem refers to all the places that you live in Eretz Yisrael. So if you grow grain in Tel Aviv, you grow in Haifa, you grow in, I'm afraid to say which parts of Eretz Yisrael, part of Eretz Yisrael. I'm trying to be places that are for sure on the holiday, it's part of Eretz Yisrael. You grow in Hebron, for sure in Eretz Yisrael. You grow in Tzfat, you're in Eretz Yisrael. You grow grain down in a lot of something, we'll leave out certain details. So the bottom line is you grow grain in Eretz Yisrael, so that's considered to be Chumash v'seichem. You grow grain in Nebraska, that's not called Chumash v'seichem. What a strange way of depicting Eretz Yisrael. What a bizarre way of describing Eretz Yisrael. B'chomosh v'seichem. Where says, no, the reason why the Torah writes in such a roundabout way, B'chomosh v'seichem, but it's really referring to Eretz Yisrael, is to highlight the following, that the dinim of Chadash, the issue of Chadash, only begins la'acha Yerusha v'yeshiva. It only begins after Klal Yisrael conquered Eretz Yisrael and they settled Eretz Yisrael. So if you remember back to your days in Sefer Yeshua, so it took 14 years until they got settled into the land. They entered into Eretz Yisrael, then it took them 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, then it took them 7 years to divide Eretz Yisrael, to inhabit Eretz Yisrael. So that's called the Zayin Shekivshu, Zayin Shechilku. So it happens to be that there are certain halachas, particularly concerning the mitzvah to live Baretz, that depend upon those 14 years passing. When Klal Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, so they didn't start right away to be Mafresh Tumah. They didn't start Ma'is right away. They didn't start Shemitah right away. First they had to conquer the land, they had to divide the land, and then when everything was all settled, that's when all the mitzvot Lewis Baritz began. Almost all. One of the exceptions was Challah. Chala, the Gemara comments on Pesukim, V'wachem al-Aretz, Nevi'as Mitzas Chemim, as soon as you start to walk in, even though you didn't take over the entire land, so that's, you have to be a Kuchim, you have to have everybody coming in, but you don't need Le'achay Rushi B'Yeshiva. So it's the Moshe for Shemitah. So the Shemitah cycles, the Shemitah count, only began, the first year was not the year they came into Eretz Yisrael. The first year was, after the 14 years, that became year one for the Shemitah cycle. So too, for Chodesh, the Gemara says that Ibechomosh Vaseichem does not refer to the wheat that's growing in Nebraska. It's referring to Eretz Yisrael, but it's referring to only Eretz Yisrael, the Achei Rishi B'Shiva. How should we pass it in the Shaila? That's a pretty loaded question. So you have a Machlekes HaTanoim, so we have Kloli HaPsach. So one of the Kloli HaPsach is you try to follow the Rambam against the Yochid. One of the Kloli HaPsach is you try to follow Stam Mishnayos. The problem is you have a couple of steerers in Kloli HaPsach that are floating around in the Sugya, and you ended up really with the Machlekes HaRishonim, what the final Psach HaLofa is in terms of this question. So this presented as Machlekes HaTanoim now ended up to become Machlekes HaRishonim. How do we pass it, HaLofa? So this is where it starts to get a little bit tricky. So the three basic pillars of Psach HaLofa for already for quite some time were always the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. Who are the ones who were conveyed on through the pillars? The Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Yosef writes in his Hakdamah to the Beis Yosef that when he was turning to the Rishonim to see how to be Machriya, how to Paskin Shaila, so the Beis Yosef says that he took the majority of the three major works of Psach HaLofa in the days of the Rishonim. The first was the Rif, the second was the Rambam, the third was the Rush. And the Beis Yosef writes that whenever you have a Machloikis between the three, so he's going to follow the two out of the three. That's why the Shulchan Aruch is always slanted in the direction of the Sfaradim, because the Rif and the Rambam are both Sfaradim, and he had many, many similar traditions, whereas the Rush was Ashkenazi, so he had certain different traditions and different things. So the Rush is always going to be out of the movement, two out of three. That's why 99% of the time, the Shulchan Aruch is pointing in the direction what became the Sfaradim Psach HaLofa. We were just talking about this last night. There was someone in our house, one of my daughter's friends was in the house after Shabbos, so she had walked over on Shabbos. She asked me when I came into the house, so she asked me whether it was Rebbeinu Tam's man yet. So I said, yes, a couple of minutes. So I told her, you can still hear Abdullah. I said, you don't have to light the candle. You can still be Yotzi Abdullah from Fakamik already, so you can still hear Abdullah, but it's not done. So somebody asked me on the side, the girl happens to be from a Sfaradi family, so he asked me, are the Sfaradi machabin on Rebbeinu Tam? So I said, yes, it's there. So I said it's a little bit funny that the Sfaradim are Machber and Rebbeinu Tam, because Rebbeinu Tam was the Ashkenazi Sfaradim, the leader of the Balei Tosfos. I said the Rif and the Rambam never heard of this Rebbeinu Tam Shita. First of all, they heard of the Rambam may have heard of Rebbeinu Tam, the Rif lived before Rebbeinu Tam, but I said the Rif and the Rambam Mechlau were nervous. This whole idea of Toshkiyah, so my son, 72 minutes, the whole story that didn't exist in the world view of the Rif and the Rambam. So I said, but truth to be told, the Shulchan Aruch does quote it. So I said, it's not a great surprise when the Sfaradim Chosheh Shulchan Aruch Tam, because the Maaseh Shulchan Aruch holds the Rebbeinu Tam. So I don't know. So we were pilpling in the kitchen last night about how much Sfaradim, by the time we finished the pilpul, it was read Rebbeinu Tam. So here, in normal, regular Psach Halacha, so the Shulchan Aruch says, I'm always going to follow two out of the three. That was part of what prompted the Ramah to write the tablecloth, the mappa, on the Shulchan Aruch, because there are so many things in Shulchan Aruch that are not the practice of the Ashkenazim. So the Ramah was an Ashkenazim, lived in Poland, in Krakow. So he followed the views of the Balei Tosfos and the Rush, and the later Chachmei Ashkenaz. So that's how he incorporated them into the Shulchan Aruch. So 99% of the time, the machlekes between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah is just an old machlekes between the Chachmei Sfarad and the Chachmei Ashkenaz. So here, the Beis Yosef follows his old practice, looking to the robe of the Rishonim, what should it then be? How should we pass the halacha in this question? Is Chodesh Noeg in Chutz La'aretz or not? So the Shulchan Aruch looked at the Rif, looked at the Rambam, looked at the Rush, and they all said the same thing. It was the Chumrah. All three of these Rishonim paskin that Chodesh is Noeg in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch, without any hesitation, without any limitation, no kulos whatsoever, the Shulchan Aruch writes with Feirish, the Chodesh is Noeg in Chutz La'aretz, but Darais, he writes it in Orchaim, the Edvach is basic, he writes again in Yeridea, in the Yedekhele Gimel. So Shulchan Aruch's Pesach was across the board that Chodesh is Noeg Midaraisa, like the view of the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. But notwithstanding what the Shulchan Aruch writes, that there were Rishonim who disagreed, and those Rishonim who disagreed were primarily Chachmei Ashkenaz. They didn't make it into the Rush, but there were some of the Gedolim Rishonim of Chachmei Ashkenaz that disagreed with this pshat of the Sefer HaTruma, and then Yozarut, and a group of Rishonim, who some of the big names in terms of the later Chachmei Ashkenaz, who did disagree and said that no, the whole thing is not true, and we pass the Chodesh is not really Negev Chutzlots altogether. So one of the issues is that even if you take the lenient view that Chodesh is not Negev Chutzlots at all, the Gemara says in Maseches Menachos that for sure it's Negev with the Rabbanon. The Gemara says that in Bavel, they were observing the Dinim of Yashan. Most of the famous Gemara, Roy and Bavel, were observing the Dinim of Yashan. The Gemara only has a Shaila, we mentioned before, when you get to the end of the year, when you get to Tezai and Nisan, you have to wait the extra day now. The Chazal Institute is faking the Yoma for Chodesh and Yashan. That was the whole Shaila. So the Gemara's whole people about that, about whether you have to observe the extra day in Bavel. But forget about the extra day, but about the whole thing. So clearly the Gemara was assuming that Chodesh is knowing in Bavel. So the Gemara says that even if you hold that Chodesh is not knowing min HaTorah in Bavel, it's still knowing min Durabonin in Bavel. So Chazal made this as an exception to the rule. So now we have to turn around and say, wait a second. Even if we want to be makel and say that Chodesh doesn't apply min HaTorah in Chutz Laaretz, at least applies min Durabonin, for sure it applies min Durabonin. So here the Rishonim explain, no. They're explaining that, yeah, Chodesh applies in Chutz Laaretz min Durabonin, the same way Trumas and Isis applies in Chutz Laaretz min Durabonin. So what does that mean, Trumas and Isis? The Gemara says in a few places, Trumas Chutz Laaretz. So Taisus, we mentioned a couple weeks ago, Taisus, a long discussion in Binyan Yechulin, where they try to show you that even though the Gemara says that Trumas and Maisis apply in Chutz Laaretz with the Rabbanan, that doesn't mean all the Rabbanan, all places. That means only the Aratzas HaSmuchos. It means if you live in Egypt, you live in Saudi Arabia, whatever areas you live, which are very, very close to Eretz Yisrael, so those places there would be, there's a Takonis HaChamim, that you're afraid you're going to mix up. If you don't observe Trumas and Maisis in Egypt, next thing you know is you're going to cross the border into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to continue to forget to observe Trumas and Maisis. A guy lives in France, a guy lives in America, so Lo Shemal Dov Zemiyonim, nobody that we know of is Makbet and Mimah for Trumas and Maisis and pay with Chutzlar. That's absurd, nobody knows that Bisman is that. Even though there was some Rishonim probably held that way, but for Maisis we don't hold that way. So that's what the Rishonim write, that if you hold that Chodesh is Noeg in Chutzlar, it's Midaraisa. So then Chutz Laaretz means Chutz Laaretz, means the whole world. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference whether you're in Egypt, whether you're in Saudi Arabia, or whether you're in Kansas. It's Noeg Midaraisa. If you hold that it's only Noeg Midarabanan, then it's probably only Noeg in the Aratzas HaSemuchos, and not in the further places. So that was the Mahalach in the days of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and many of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, Bnei Baruch and others, were of the opinion that for us, practically speaking, Chodesh doesn't apply. We all live in Aratzas HaSemuchos, we're far from Eretz Yisrael. Midaraisa, we pass it doesn't apply. Midarabanan, it doesn't apply. Not the rice, not the rabbanon, everything is mehetagom. So you had a very, very big machlekes here. It started as a machlekes at Tanoim and continued to become a machlekes of Rishonim. Is Chodesh knowing in Chutz Laaretz at all? So you had one group of Rishonim say, absolutely, click the Yahor, it's knowing in Chutz Laaretz. And you had other Rishonim saying, no, that's not knowing bechlam. What would our regular mahalach be in terms of psak? You have a shayla like this, where the Rif and the Ram and the Rush all side together and say that something applies with the Raisa, and then you have a few Rishonim, you know, here and there, who disagree. So if this was any other Issa de Raisa, so we would clearly be Machmer. We're Machmer on things that are much less severe than this. So we would for sure be Machmer on this. We would say, maybe it's a Sofik, maybe Rob Rishon holds it's Osir. So we would be for sure be Machmer on this. So there have to be other things that are thrown into this mix. There have to be other factors that are thrown into this mix. We just quoted this on one of the Friday night shiurim a couple weeks ago, the famous comment of the Taz, where the Taz writes that the emesis, most Torah opinions probably are machmer. Most opinions in Rishonim, most opinions in the Poskim are probably machmer in Chodesh. But it does constitute a Shas al Chak, says the Taz. It's very, very difficult for us to be machmer in this. Why is it such a big Shas al Chak? So for two reasons. So one reason is because you need bread. It's hard to get, hard not to eat. So interestingly, the Taz doesn't highlight that. The Taz says that we can't get any beer to drink. So he says that in the days of the Taz, they had to drink beer. The wells, the water was all probably miserable to drink, and wine was too expensive. So that was the drink. So he says all the beer is made out of barley. So all the barley is a chashash of chadash. So he says, if we're going to be machmer in this, it's going to be so, so difficult for Klal Yisrael to have anything to drink. So therefore the Taz writes that we can apply the rule that appears in the beginning of Maseches Nida, that Kedai in such and such l'smecha b'shas al-chach. When you have extenuating circumstances, so you're allowed to rely on a Das Yochid. So the Taz writes that he thinks that the matirim of Chodesh are really Das Yochid. He doesn't think that they're the majority. He thinks the majority opinions in the Gemara and the Rishonim, well, the Hachmer and Chodesh and Chutz Laaretz, But since there was a minority, some Rishon HaVeldim was mutar, so kedai lismach aleihem b'shasacha. You're allowed to rely on them when you have extenuating circumstances. So the Shach disagrees with that taz. The Shach writes that klal the Gemara of kedai lismach aleihem b'shasacha only applies to dinim derabanan. The context of that statement in the Gemara is about a dinim derabanan. And the Shach says you have no right to extend that to deraisa. The deraisa is a suffix deraisa l'chumra rope. You have suffix a rope l'chumra. You have no right to be a maker whatsoever. So if we were just looking at it through the eyes of this one issue of is chadash nogi chutz l'aretz or not, so we would probably be very, very weary. We would be very, very shaky to be made a lot, right? Because probably Rov HaRishonim were in the direction of Chumrah. Shmarach was for sure in the direction of Chumrah. And the Taz is chiddush, that's a shas al-chach. So it would have to be analyzed on two fronts. Number one, are we even comfortable relying on shas al-chach, das yachitz, by their isis? And even if we are, who says this is a shas al-chach? So shas al-chach is something that has to be reevaluated every single generation. You have to take a look and see, is it such shas al-chach? In Poland in the 1600s, if you didn't have any beer, you didn't have any bread to eat, that was a shas al-chach. In America, in 2022, so that's a shas al-chach. It's hard to call it a shas al-chach, as man as that. So lav dafka, that's the route that we want to go down. So again, so we have basic machlokes that we showed him, but maybe there are other factors involved, or other issues that are going to mitigate this question. So there was a big question that was raised. It was already raised in the days of the Rishonim, and then it wasn't such a popular discussion in the days of the Rishonim. It became much, much more popular in later days, and that was the following question. Even if you hold that Chodesh is knowing in Chutz Laaretz and close to the Rishonim, does it necessarily mean that it applies if the grain is grown by a non-Jew? Something grows in a Goyisha field, so does Chodesh apply to that? Why in the world would one think that the din is different, like the hechet pesach and the din is different? So there is such a concept of, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah tluyos baretz, shmita, trumas and isros, that apply in Eretz Yisrael. There's a loaded sugya about what if you have a goy who buys land in Eretz Yisrael, so does trum apply, does isros apply, does shmita apply? The entire head of the mechira is hinging and holding on for dear life to that shmita, that at least under certain circumstances, yesh kinyan liyakom mafkir midei trumas and isros, the shmita, etc. Which is again a very, very loaded, controversial topic. But there is such a concept of goyim buying something and somehow maybe the mitzvahs don't apply to that item. The problem is that it's hard to envision that in Chutz Laaretz. That idea of yesh kinyan liyakom mafkir, which is again a very, very controversial issue, that makes sense in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael, the mechayev of a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is kedushas haaretz. So one can argue that kedushas Eretz Yisrael means a land that's owned by Jews. If a guy owns a field somewhere in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, so that land almost like loses a certain degree of its kedusha. So I can understand that when you're dealing with mitzvahs and clear barats that emanate in Eretz Yisrael. You're dealing in Chodesh in Kansas, so who cares who owns the field in Kansas? There's no kedusha in the Kansas. Well, it's Kansas is the Machiah. So might have Kamina with the eye on it, or whether Dorothy's, grandfather, whoever owns the field, might have Kamina who owns it. There's no place like... No chadash like Kansas, so there's no. What's the difference who owns the field? So what would there be a svar? Kind of svar would that be to say that because it's owned by a goy, somehow it's different? So the Gemara Masechet Shabbos Rishona discusses concerning the Korban Omer. Now the Korban Omer is obviously that's the end of the chadash. So clearly that's an important part of the package of chadash. So the Gemara has a drasha concerning the Korban Omer. Kitzirchem v'lo kitzir akum. When you bring the Korban Omer, so you have to bring the Korban Omer from your field, from your grain. You don't bring it from barley that was grown by goyim. You have to bring it by barley that was grown by Jews. That's how the Gemara has a fascinating discussion. How did they bring that first korban omer? The Pesukim in Yeshua seem to say that they brought the first korban omer from what? They entered it there until a couple of days before. How did the barley grow so fast? Was it Gresha barley? So it was a whole fascinating discussion about the agricultural nisim, about the growing of the barley that first year. But there's then Ketzircha Melo Shel Acham. So some wanted to suggest that just as the Torah says that the sugya of the korban omer doesn't speak to goyish grain, the reason why it doesn't speak to goyish grain is because goyish grain wasn't subject to chodesh in the first place. The whole point of the korban omer is to be matir the grain. So you have to bring from grain that was chodesh. That's the whole point of the mitzvah. You bring the new barley and you bring it as a korban. So the Torah is mafkia goyish grain from the parish of the korban omer. It's mafkia from the entire picture. And others say, like, like why? Well, who gave you the right to make that jump? It's a special psul. You can't bring goyishim in. It doesn't mean that it wasn't chadash. It wasn't subject to the isur of chadash. So this was a question already back in the Rishon. One of the Balei Tais, the Rivav, if I'm not mistaken, had this chiddush gadol that chadash doesn't apply to goyishim. This would be a phenomenal lakula. So even if you want to be machmer in chutzlaretz, that means that you as a Jew own a field in Kansas, that would be a problem chadash. But if a goy owns a field, so that's not going to be your problem. So the Bach was the one who was the biggest believer that the Bach in his comments of the Torah writes that he thinks that the reason why Klal Yisrael in Europe and all the Jews in Poland were so lenient about the Shaila was not necessarily because it was Chutz Loretz. Chutz Loretz was very, very questionable Kula. He thinks the real Kula was because it was Goyish grains, Goyish own fields, and that was the real reason. I don't know all the historical details, but in good portions of time, Europe, so Jews weren't even allowed to own fields at certain times. So says the Bach that all the grain that's coming into Poland, into Krakow, Muslim in Krakow, all the grain that's coming in is all from Croatian fields, it's all from the Polish, from the peasants, and none of us there is Jewish grain, and therefore the whole din of Chodesh and Yosh, the whole thing doesn't apply to Chlau, this man is there for us. That was the famous Kula of the Bach. So do we accept this Bach Lalocha? As we ask. So the Hasidim were traditionally very, very naked like this. They were probably some of the early Hasidish Rebbes. I think it was the Chazem of Lublin, if I'm not mistaken, that they said he was the biggest supporter of this Kula, thought this was the Emes Lamita, and this is the reason why Klai Yisrael will make it all these years. And this is it. That's why the Hasidim Adayam Hazeh, so they very, very naked. They're not very Rishmachal, the whole Sugya. Now, because it became, it's profitable to put on Yosh on your products, then you get a bigger market. So the Hasidish Hashkachas made them start to become, you know, cognizant of Yosh. But for traditionally, the Hasidim was not, this was not really on their radar screen because the Hasidish Poskim were never really machmir this. And one of the reasons why they were so makil was because the early Hasidish Rebbes all held like this Bach, that everything was okay. So Meidach Yisa, though, the Vilna Gaon, was the strongest opponent of this sheet of the Bach. The Vilna Gaon writes, it's Mamsha Tos. He writes, it's a Mamsha mistake, it's against the Yerushalmi. He says, Mamsha is endless book as a cloud. He says, this idea. He was so opposed to this idea that he had a taina against the Be'er HaGoylah. The Be'er HaGoylah was one of the Gedolim who, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he writes like the notes where the Shulchan Aruch got certain things from. So he writes, you know, the sources on the side of the top, the little print at the top of Shulchan Aruch. And then he writes like one or two little lines, you know, Shtibot Torah sometimes, you know, the Be'er HaGoylah. So the Be'er HaGoylah in the Sivan, he said, giving you a day about Chadash. So he writes the Skula, and he also supports the Skula. He said, this is the reason why everyone's Mecca, like this Rival, like this Bat, and that's the Minig Yisrael. And then showing the story's over, everything is Buddha because it's Goyish grain. So the Vilna Gaon and his Be'er HaGro and Yoreh Deh writes that Tov Hoyalo Hashtika. It would have been better if he wouldn't have said it. He shouldn't have wrote what he wrote because it was Mamasha, it was a Tolos Gomor. So the Vilna Gaon writes it in the most respectful way, but it's very, very strong Lashon that he uses. What was interesting is that the Be'er HaGro was the Gro's grandfather. He was the Gro's great-great-grandfather, a couple of generations back. He was a descendant of the, I think on his mother's side, he was a descendant of the Be'er HaGro. So he's talking about his own Elta Zayn. He writes, Tov HaLashti, he shouldn't have written what he wrote, because when he wrote it, it's a big nichshol, because people are being nakel shalak yadin. So now you have already two possible kulas that are bubbling around here in terms of Chodesh. So the starting point is, Chomosh HaSeichem, taking Chomosh HaSeichem in the Torah. So no. So some of the Torahim say, no, not so fast. Not so fast. It's chutzlar. It's chutzlar. Everything is okay. Midrash and Mishnah, it's okay. And probably even Midrash it's okay. So you had one group of Rishonim was saying that, but the problem is that group of Rishonim was probably minority view, and Shulchan Aruch wasn't even mitiyaches to that group. Then you had the second idea that was also starting to surface here, is that well, it's even though it's chutzlar, it should be noy, but it's goyish grain. Goyish grain, nobody cares about any of these mitzvot anyway. So the Gra and others point out it's against the famous Shemeshamit that doesn't say that. And there's very little reason to believe that should be true. Rav Shoshana is not convincing at all. And therefore, you have a lot of Gedolim who said that's probably not the best way to deal. So now you have two coolers, each one shaky. So what do you do with a combination of two shaky coolers? What do you do? So depends what your approach is. Some will say, well, it's a snake faker. He said, the first cool is not right, the second cool is not right. So that's a question, what your take is on this. So in terms of the world of absolute pure halacha, so we have a little bit to rely on. We have some sources. We have, you know, between the Rishonim and the Taz and the Bach. We have a few, you know, things to rely on. But there's got to be more to this picture than that. There's got to be more to explain this phenomena, why Gedolei Olam for 2,000 years have been partaking of Chodesh, why this was unheard of except mamash from the Yechidi school of hundreds and hundreds of years. So what was it based on? It's hard to believe that it was based just on that one sheet and just on that. There's got to be more to the picture than that. So the emphasis is there is more to the picture than that, and then we kind of almost like switch out of the world of pure halacha into the world of metzias. But as we said, metzias changes a lot. So we have two different jobs to do. We have to first try to figure out what in the world of metzias was back in the days, back in Europe, back in Eastern Europe, where most of us come from. So we're at great-grandparents, when we're not Makbid, most of us, when we're not Makbid in Yashin. So what was the metzias back in years gone by, and what has the metzias become in America? So those are two different questions. And the answer has been the same to both of those questions, Beilin Kula, Beilin Chumra. So we have to try to figure out what the answers to those facts are. In determining Metzias, so there's going to be a lot of halacha in terms of what do you do. It's like, you know, with Lahavdo, you run a study, you get all your data, and then you have to interpret the data properly. So now that we have the following Metzias, now what do we do with that Metzias? Do we apply the rules of Suffolk? Do we apply the rules of Rove? Do we apply the rules of Sfeiks Fakers? Do we apply the rules of Shesh Matirans? So we have to then plug in all the facts. So it's one thing to collect the data. So we're going to try to put ourselves back in Poland in the 1500s to figure out what the data was then. And then we'll try to get to America in the 2000s to figure out what the data is now. And then we'll try to interpret it. And the interpretation of that data may be different in Poland than it is from today. So stay tuned. Enjoy your pastries or whatever they are or not, because they may be Chodesh. Probably not.